And a joy to be here with you this morning. Normally, one of the members of the church there in Bealington will travel with me to gospel meetings and lectureships and so forth. Brother Roy Baker is with me this morning. Get to know him, one of our fine members. I brought him along just in case I'd get hung up in the snow, though, so that I wouldn't have to do all the pushing myself. But I think, to the best of my remembrance, when I was a student here at the school, I don't think that I was late any of the days of education, but I was a little bit late this morning, so. But it's good to see each and every one of you. It's good to be a part of this theme, of this series of lectures. When we consider Christian evidences, the foundation for which our belief and our practice rests, it's very important, or it needs to be important to us. And I am pleased to have the subject that has been assigned to me this morning. We want to look at the idea of morality, the idea of right and wrong. Where did it come from? Where did we come up with such an idea? Right now we are in the midst of the World Series of baseball. And it seems fairly common that we turn on the news, maybe listen to the sporting report, and they talk about performance-enhancing drug use in baseball and maybe other sporting events also. Some type of drug or steroid which would enhance the ability to hit the ball farther. And thus, we see men hitting 70 home runs in a year's time. Where in the world did that ability come from? But who cares? Who cares if they hit 100 home runs just because they're taking these drugs? Oh, wait a minute though, preacher. That wouldn't be fair. It would be unfair to the other players, to the other teams, who stand a greater chance of losing the game if these drugs are being used. Again, who cares? Who cares if they get beat by 20 runs in a game because the other team is using these drugs? But wait a minute, it wouldn't be right. It wouldn't be right to use in these drugs in influencing a team sporting event. After all, how could we gamble on the outcome of the game if they're using drugs? We think about standards. The specific standards which are used in NASCAR racing. I'm not a big racing fan, but just for a moment, think about some of these things. The engine tolerances in the race cars, they are examined and inspected, and everything has to be just right. The tires, the shape of the body, all of these things are set according to standards, but who cares? Who cares whether one race car has 100 more horsepower than the other? Well, it makes a difference. Why should we care? But wait a minute. It would be unfair to Jeff Gordon if Michael Waltrip's car had a lot more horsepower. But who cares? So what if he wins all the races? Who cares if the richest racing team could afford to soup up their car so that they would win all the races? What makes a difference? But someone's bound to cry out, "That's not right. That's not right." Now keep this thought pattern up. And for the instructors and the director of the school and so forth, don't be jumping up running after me. But why have tests at the West Virginia School of Preaching? Why not just give all of those men the diploma with a little golden seal on there and say, well, you're a graduate of the School of Preaching. It doesn't matter if you've learned anything. It doesn't matter if you passed any tests. But wait a minute, that wouldn't be fair, would it? That wouldn't be right to the churches who are looking for good, sound preachers to fill their pulpits. Why do we give trophies? Why do we give awards to the winner of an event? Who cares? Those of you who may have taken the day off from work to be here today, when it comes Friday, at the end of the week, what if the boss says, I'm just not going to pay you this week. Maybe next week I'll pay you. You've done a good week's work. You've worked hard, but I'm just not going to pay you this week. The cry would go out, well, that's not right. There's something wrong with that. The agreement was, we get paid every Friday. Well, who cares? You don't need paid. Over and over, the answer is repeated. It's only right to do some things, and it's wrong if we don't. Anything less would be wrong. But who says? Is the standard of right and wrong, the standard for morality, is that standard based on the richest people making the decisions? Or is the standard of morality based on those who are the most talented? Is the standard of morality based on the majority making the decisions? If the majority says something is right, then does that necessarily make it right? Is the standard of morality based on those who are the oldest? And thus their wisdom must be the proper direction for us to follow. Or is it that which brings physical pleasure? If it feels good, then it must be right. Is that necessarily true? The issue at hand is the source for morality in humanity. Not just a few, but for all human beings. Where did that standard for morality come from? Morality, I believe, is taken for granted, yet it's applied every day. You applied it in one way or another this very day. As you drove here today, you followed posted speed limits. You followed some of the laws of the land. Why? Who cares? Go 100 miles an hour if you want to. Well, no. There's something wrong about that, isn't there? There's a law that's been established. You put your safety belt on, maybe told a passenger in your vehicle to place his or her safety belt on due to the snowy highways. You paid a fee for your gasoline. Now, the price of the gasoline might be immoral in some people's minds, but yet it's immoral to pump that gas into your car and then just drive off and not pay for it. There's a standard, isn't there? There's a standard. As you drove here today, if there was a pedestrian in the crosswalk, was this an objective moral decision not to just run that person over? Or is it subjective? The next person that comes along can make his choice whether to run that person over or not. That we all just make our own decisions based on our own moral standard. Well, of course, we might chuckle at that, but I think it makes the point. Why are there some points of morality which must apply to everyone, and thus being objective, an objective standard of morality? There's only one answer. And that answer is, there must be a universal standard for morality. A standard that applies to everyone. But the point still remains, where did that come from? Where did the standard of morality originate? Why are there some points of morality which must apply to everyone. What is that standard? Is it government? If the government says that it is your choice to take the life of an unborn baby, does that make it right? Just because some freedom has been offered by either our nation's government or our state government or our local government, does that necessarily make it right? Is the law of the land the ultimate standard, or is there a higher standard, a standard that is above our Congress, the senators, and even our president? Is the standard based on each individual civilization or culture? In other words, it might be right here, but wrong in another nation. At the conclusion of the Second World War, Justice Robert H. Jackson wrote that nations must subscribe to the laws of humanity and the dictates of the public conscience. He continued saying, "We propose to punish acts which have been regarded as criminal since the time of Cain." He went all the way back to Genesis. "Since the time of Cain, and have been so written in every civilized code." Well, where did that standard come from then? The ideas of fairness, the idea of rewards for accomplishments, the idea of remuneration for work that has been done, these are not based on civilizations. These ideas, these standards, are not based on the richest people making the decision, or the most powerful, or even majority decision in a society. But it goes much higher than mankind himself. It's beyond what mankind has developed. Other subjects must be considered. Think about honesty. Being honest with your fellow man, telling the truth. If there is no objective standard for morality, then there is no truth. There is no objective standard for truth. And thus, lying doesn't even exist if there's no standard for morality. And thus, honesty, who cares? There's no purpose in making a promise to someone if morality rests on man's shoulders alone. Because one man's standard for morality might say, you must keep your promises. Another man's standard for morality might dictate, well, I can change my mind later. It doesn't matter if I keep my promises. Why argue and debate a point if there is no objective standard for that which is right? As we heard in our previous lecture presentation, talking about the logical progression of points leading to a reasonable conclusion, a conclusion that's true. If there is no standard of morality, there's no room for logic in the first place. Because it doesn't matter if that final point in that progression is true or not. How about your emotions? Why does a person cry when he or she is wronged by another? Who cares if you're wronged or not? What causes those emotional responses? Why are we satisfied when we've completed a job well done? Because no one cares if there is no standard of morality. It doesn't matter if you did a good job or a bad job. if there is no standard? Why scream for defense when you're treated unfairly? Why seek the courts of our land? It wouldn't really matter. When pondering the ultimate application of morality, that which is right, that which is wrong, if there is no standard of morality, there is no sin, which is the transgression of the standard. And of course, that is identified as God's law. 1 John chapter 3 and verse 4, yes. When we consider these things, why should there be a punishment for sin? Why should there be a reward for that which is perceived as being righteous? There would be no reason to change your life. There would be no reason to repent. There would be no reason to seek forgiveness from others with those two precious words, "I'm sorry." I'm sorry when I hurt someone. If there is no standard of morality, who cares if you hurt that person? We see many of these points that people in everyday life would never accept those things. But yet, they want to reject the ultimate standard of morality, the source for the morality that is within us. There are only two possible sources for the subject of morality. Either it is an inside source that man himself invented and devised the idea of morality and established the standard by himself. Or it is an outside source, that which is higher, that which is greater than mankind, and thus the Creator, God. Brother Kyle Butt states, "The person who does not believe that God exists has only one choice when it comes to explaining morality. Man must have thought it up by himself." There is no other choice. There's no other gray area for that matter. Instead of exalting humanity to a royal level, what happens when we reject that ultimate standard of morality being God? Actually, we result with a dangerous attack on the value of humanity itself. Consider some points. When God is rejected, first of all, man is held to have evolved by chance, merely as an accident of fate. Well, that's a well-known and oftentimes well-accepted point by some in the world. But the second step, no higher moral universal law exists, but law is determined by what but few people in power hold to be expedient and best. And so, a certain number of human beings come up with what the standard would be as far as morality is concerned. The third step would then be, the shift can be thus made to sociological law, which includes determining who lives and who dies. If the decision is made that you are no longer valuable to society, that you no longer hold an important role in society, thus your life can be taken with no guilt on the part of those who take your life. Because, after all, man is the standard of morality. Fourthly, no ultimate values exist. Therefore, personal cruelty can have free course. When we think about these things, if there was no ultimate standard for morality, if right and wrong within mankind is not rooted in the God of heaven that we read about in the Bible, and if that conclusion was held by humanity in general, what a horrible place this world would be in which to live. And we can see, I believe, that some of those horrible conclusions are in fact coming to pass in our world this very day by those who reject God as being the ultimate source for morality. Morality is within mankind. It's not invented by man, but instead morality is a sense which is placed within man, identified as our conscience. I never encourage anyone to violate their conscience, but I do encourage, make sure your conscience is based on a true foundation, and that being from God. While there may be some slight differences in its application, yet there is a sense. It's not an instinct. It's a sense which identifies some actions as being right and some which are wrong. For instance, traitors are never exalted by any society, for that matter, in this world. No nation accepts the idea that 2 + 2 = 5. There comes a point where, no, that's wrong. That's not right. That's not the proper conclusion. Selfishness is never admired, but in fact, benevolence is upheld as the proper attitude. Instead of being self-invented, the source for morality must be from outside of mankind. C.S. Lewis stated, "Anyone studying man from outside, as we study electricity or cabbages, not knowing our language and consequently not able to get any inside knowledge from us, but merely observing what we did, would never get the slightest evidence that we had this moral law. How could he? For his observations would only show what we did, and the moral law is about what we ought to do. If there was a controlling power outside the universe, it could not show itself to us as one of the facts inside the universe. No more than the architect of a house could actually be a wall or staircase or fireplace in the house. The only way in which we could expect it to show itself would be inside us, as an influence or a command trying to get us to behave in a certain way. And that's just what we do find inside us. This moral drive within man, which must have its source from outside of man, is often called the sense of conscience. The conscience is real. Having the capacity of speaking to a person, of condemning a person, of approving of one's actions, and of making one weep bitter tears of remorse. Furthermore, man has a sensitivity to injustice. Brother Curtis Cates. Since man could not possibly have invented his own conscience, there must be an external source and an external standard bearer to which we apply. Brother Wayne Jackson states, "What I am saying is this. Every man can be driven to a point where he will defend some standard of right or wrong. This moral consciousness is inherent within man. If there's a moral law, there must be a moral lawgiver who has implanted moral sensitivity within the human heart, which, depending upon how it is educated, will either accuse or excuse man." One's conscience must be educated in accordance with the standard of the Creator of that conscience. There's no other option. Certainty of mind is no guarantee of following the truth. There are people in our day who believe sincerely that what they are doing is true, what they are believing is in accordance with God's will, But when we look at the standard given to us by God, we find that that's not necessarily the case. There's no other option, though. Consider the moral directives of the Apostle Paul, talking about his own conscience, that which he believed as being right. In the book of Acts, in chapter 23, and verse 1, Paul, earnestly beholding the council, said, "Men and brethren, I have lived in all good conscience before God until this day." Had he always been acceptably, faithfully obedient to God until that day? No. The Scriptures point that out clearly to us. But his conscience was clear. He thought he was doing right. If we go further into the Scriptures, chapter 26 and verse 9, again we find Paul saying, "I verily thought with myself that I ought to do many things contrary to the name of Jesus of Nazareth." He thought that it was right for him in the sight of God to persecute the church. But of course, that was not God's will. 1 Timothy chapter 1, again, the Apostle Paul writing to his son in the faith, 1 Timothy 1 and verse 13 states, "Who was before," talking about himself, "a blasphemer and a persecutor and injurious, but I obtained mercy because I did it ignorantly in unbelief." His conscience was clear, but morally, he was doing wrong in God's sight. When considering who is the creator of the inner working of mankind, the answer is found within the pages of his inspired word, which we recognize as the Bible. The Genesis record reveals the origin of mankind, both physically and spiritually, and it includes the source for morality. Note that when God created man, he breathed into his nostrils the breath of life and he became a living being. We later read of the spirit of just men made perfect. So this word usually, if not always, refers to that part of man that is made in the image of God. Brother Clem Thurman made that statement. Again, Brother Curtis Kate states, "God is a moral being. Man is a moral being. Of all God's creatures on earth, only man is able to appreciate things morally right and morally wrong. We recognize that which is acceptable and that which is not acceptable, that which is righteous, that which is sinful. We can see the difference. The existence of human morality proves that there has to be a moral lawgiver, a standard that has been given to us by our Creator. What moral law, though, has been revealed to mankind in order to be spiritually acceptable to that moral lawgiver? The Apostle Paul wrote in 2 Timothy 3, 16 and 17, "All Scripture is given by inspiration of God and is profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness, that the man of God may be perfect," meaning complete, "thoroughly furnished unto all good works." The standard by which we are accepted in God's sight. And so, in our time that we have remaining, which is very little, we want to look at three scriptural terms that might help in shaping moral thoughts so that our actions will be in accordance with the moral lawgiver. First of all, the word ought is found in the Scriptures. The word ought, aphelo in the Greek, meaning to be under obligation, something you ought to do, something you should do. Paul in Athens, as he spoke in Acts chapter 17 and verse 29, states, "For as much then as we are the offspring of God, we ought not to think that the Godhead is like unto gold or silver or stone, graven by art and man's device. What man-made idol could have given us the sense of ought? What stone, what wood, what silver, what gold, whatever material image could you ever imagine that could give mankind a sense of ought? After all, man is the one that carved out those images in the first place. We have responsibilities to others who are spiritually weak. We ought to support the weak, Romans 15 and verse 1. It was the duty of the priest in the Old Testament, as Hebrews 5 verses 1 through 3 pointed out. It was the duty of the priest to make offerings for the people. He ought to do those things. In Hebrews chapter 5, a passage that I wish more people would recognize and apply, Hebrews chapter 5 and verse 12, the writer states, "For when for the time you ought to be teachers, you have need that one teach you again, which be the first principles of the oracles of God, and are become such as have need of milk and not of strong meat." We as Christians ought to grow in the Word and use the Word in instructing others. Christians ought to love each other, as 1 John chapter 4, verse 11. Other passages are found there in your outline books of the lectures. We can't go through all of them. But the second point we want to look at is the thing that we must do. In the Greek, the word day, necessary, as binding, it must needs be. In comparing the two words, day indicates a necessity in the nature of things rather than a personal obligation. It describes that which must be done. A phele, indicates rather the personal obligation. It is that which is proper, something that ought to be done. And so, what must be done? Jesus recognized something that must be done in the book of Acts, as again the Apostle Paul is preaching in chapter 17 and verse 3, opening and alleging that Christ must needs have suffered and risen again from the dead, and that this Jesus whom I preach unto you is Christ. The death, the burial, the resurrection of Christ had to occur. No other sacrifice could substitute for what Jesus has done for us. As Jesus talked to Nicodemus in John chapter 3 and verse 7, "Ye must be born again. There is no other way to find our way from here to heaven unless we are born again according to the instructions of God's Word." In 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 10, we must all stand before the judgment seat of Christ. We're all going to have to give an account of the things done in our body according to that which we have done, whether it be good, whether it be bad. There is no escape from the judgment. There is no escape from giving an account of the things that we have done in this life. These must take place. Finally, necessity. Anagka, I believe. Anagke would be the pronunciation in the Greek. Constraint, needful, necessary. Let's look for just a moment in Paul's writings in 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 16, where he says, "For though I preach the gospel, I have nothing to glory of, for necessity is laid upon me. Yea, woe is unto me if I preach not the gospel." Shouldn't all preachers feel that way? That we're falling short if we don't preach the whole counsel of God. That we don't deliver the gospel of Jesus Christ to a lost and dying world. It's necessary that we as preachers, as elders, as Christians in general, go everywhere preaching the gospel, just as was done following the persecution of Saul of Tarsus, or by Saul of Tarsus, as it's recorded in Acts chapter 8 and verse 4. It's perhaps the most morally important thing that we as human beings, created in the image of God, can do. Where did our morality come from? Where did it originate? There's only one possible source. It can't come from us. It can't come from human beings. It had to have come from our Creator. There is a moral lawgiver. That moral lawgiver, the God of heaven, wants all men everywhere to be saved and to come to the knowledge of the truth. Point out to your friends and your neighbors, your family, what is morally right based on the standard which our moral lawgiver has given to us. Thank you.